Welcome back to A Bold Scientist Under the Shower. As every second Monday of the month, we are here to talk about science. And today with a very special guest is here with me. Is Andrea D'Amico, who will talk, we'll discuss together about gene therapy. That's why this jingle, this soundtrack or theme song from the I Dream of Jeannie, this series from the 70s, I guess, American series talking about this gene coming out from a lamp, loving is man working for the NASA, so I don't know whether you remembered, but that's not the topic of our night. Today is with us Andrea D'Amico. Hi, Andrea, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much for the invitation. Yeah. I'm very excited and very nervous as well.
No worries. I will try to make you as confident as possible. Right. I mean, comfortable as well. Right. So, Andrea, we're going to talk today and tonight with you about the gene therapy. But before that, can you tell us a little bit about you? What is your story? Yes. In terms of academia? Where have you been? I know that we met, I think, last week, and I was immediately very interested about your story. It sounds very like Ulysses, right? Yes, going a bit everywhere in the world.
Can say that, yes. All right, so hello everybody. My name is Andrea, and I am a biologist. My education started and ended in Pisa. I got my degree over there, my bachelor in molecular biology. And then a master of science in biology applied to the biomedicine. So I am a biologist, but applied to medicine, as I already mentioned. So that's already a hint of the thing.
I mean, I think our radio listener already got scared when you say molecular big biologist.
Yes. I will tell you about that in a bit, let's say. But first of all, let's finish my CV. I did my PhD also in Italy, Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna in Pisa. And after that, I took my little luggage and decided to go across the ocean.
Were you afraid to go cross the ocean?
Yes, one of my main regrets is that I have never had the courage to go abroad before. So I did my PhD in Italy, in Pisa, because I got offered and I was comfortable in saying, like, okay, yes, let's do it. But I have colleagues right now that are doing PhD here in Amsterdam, very proud of their courage, and that's my regret, yes. But anyway, I ended up doing it in the end, so I decided to leave, and I landed in Boston, where I got a first postdoc in the Boston University. It was a difficult time because, you know, American is very different from Italy. My PhD education was totally different from the PhD in America. They have like 6 years, and here in Europe, actually in Italy, there are 3 years for the PhD. I know that here in Amsterdam it's 4. So it's a totally different experience. So my first boss didn't like my background. Let's say he was expecting too much of me, and I was not, not able to do what he was asking me to do. But I am a stubborn guy, so I decide not.
Like all Tuscany people,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. I'm very stubborn, and I was there. I was like, no, I'm not gonna go back now. I'm in Boston. Let's
try. I'm not
gonna
give up, right?
Yes, exactly. Never give up. Never give up to your dreams, people, please. And so I decided.
Yeah, but this is interesting because, anyway, doing research was your goal.
Yes, that was my first. I always dreamt of being a scientist and doing science. Originally, I wanted to do a medical doctor, actually. So, but when you start to know yourself, I realized that I was too much of an anxious guy. So I would never have the courage, or at least the responsibility of having another life under my my responsibility was like no, I cannot have that pressure over me. So now nothing about that. But as I said, I wanted to continue at least contribute in the research and for medical purposes. So that's the reason my master degree was applied to biomedicine. So my biology was, I have knowledge about the physiology, about how our body works, because I wanted to know and I wanted to have that kind of impact. So I wanted to research and know more about our body. So that's the reason why I wanted to, I ended up doing biology and applied to biomedicine specifically.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So your basically main motivation in life is to kind of solve some medical issues.
Yes.
And you found another way to do it, right?
Yes,
so instead
exactly.
of doing it really very, very much applied, yes. you kind of
This remind me of a very nice story. I used to, when I was a kid, I used to play with my grandma. As soon as she arrived at my place, I used to lay down the couch, say like, "Grandma, I feel sick. I need to be cured." And I had a little kit, with all the instrument of a doctor. And my grandma said, "Okay, let's do that. Let's see. Your heart is fine. And then let's try." And I was trying. And then I did the contrary to her. So I used to play with that in that way. So that's the reason why I wanted to be a doctor.
It's a very nice souvenir. That's nice.
Yes. But anyway, so in Boston, I ended up, as I said, my boss didn't like me, but I was stubborn enough not to give up. And I start to, send my CV all across the city, actually. I spoke with a few people. There are a lot of Italians over there. So a lot of Italian PI in academia working there. They suggest me to try.
PI is principal investigators,
yes. Like the boss in the lab
academia,
yes. And they always suggest me, and I didn't know at the time, send an email, because here in America people listen
in comparison to Italy,
yes. Here, that's in a way, it's true that America is the land of opportunities, because over there, if you have enough enthusiasm for your work, you can achieve big things. So indeed, I sent this email to this boss in Harvard University, thinking like, "Oh well, crazy! I'm sending an email to Harvard. He will never reply to me." He actually replied to me, and he said to me like, "Okay, let's go," and in a very American style, "Oh, let's come, let's have a talk." And I went there in my casual clothes, and he actually was interviewing me. And at the end of the conversation, he told me like, "Okay, I'm offering you a job." I was like, "What?" And that, well, of course, I say yes in a total, I feel like I am dreaming. And then a few, weeks later, the boss told me like, "By the way, you came to Harvard dressed not as you were supposed to go speak with an Harvard professor." I was like, "I didn't understood that you were actually doing me an interview, it's just crazy."
So they actually care about the formality.
Yes, so particularly in Harvard University, main campus. Over there, they are very formal, and this boss was, this very, very big Harvard boss, he was like, behaving like, "Okay, I'm giving you, little mortal, the opportunity of a life for working for me, the big god." Yes, over there they are a little bit, arrogant in that sense. But in the end, at least he gave me the opportunity. So I'm very pleased with that. So I stayed there for 2 years, after which also this guy would say, "Okay, you are not good enough for Harvard." That's what he told me. But again, I am a stubborn guy. I said, "Okay, I already have 2 years of experience here, and actually my job over there was not that bad, but this was just an hassle, let's say. So I again find another another opportunity, and I finally find a very nice place in Harvard University still, but it was medical school, so Harvard not main campus. So the situation was a little bit more relaxed.
So you can dress casual.
Yes, exactly. Yes, indeed. And my boss was super casual in that sense. So no formality. And she was like, do you want to do the job? You have the interest to do the job? I was like, yes, I don't know how to do this. And she was saying, okay, no problem. You will learn. And her motto has been always, life is a learning curve. If you have a problem, you just learn and move forward. And that's actually a motto that I now remember and I bring with me, because it's actually very true. So I ended up staying in that lab for 3 years. And by the end, it was 5 years of US experience. And by that time, it was the time to decide what to do in life. I would have loved to stay there and have an academic experience there, but it was far away, too far away. And I'm Italian, and we care about family. And together with my wife, we agreed and say, okay, over here we are working too much. We were actually working so much that we couldn't, we didn't see each other, because she has different time sheet than me, and we ended up doing work. So that's the problem of the American system.
By the way, his wife is doing an amazing job.
Yes, so, but she's a sommelier. So if you want any suggestion,
I will ask her.
I will send a note to her. Yes.
Okay.
So therefore,
as you said before, it's true that in US you work probably. I mean, if you want to achieve specific goals,
the US experience is very good if you want to have a very short experience. So if you want to, for example, all the students that are in my lab right now, also Dutch students that are starting their career, I always suggest, if you want to work in research, go in America, do a few years there, you will learn a lot. But to live in America, it's a different pair of sleeves, let's say. So,
and therefore you came back in Europe.
Yes.
And
so
now you are?
We came back, and right now I'm here in Amsterdam, and I'm working sanguine research, working with gene therapy applied to blood disorders.
Exactly. So they are all complicated words that we're going to explain in a little bit after a song that you have chosen.
Yes.
I didn't know about that song, so you told me a little bit about it. But before, we're going to listen to it, and then we're going to spend a few seconds if you can explain also why you have chosen this song.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Andrea. See you in a few minutes. Un giorno nuovo by Sick Tamburo.
C'è freschezza nell'aria, è una sorta di amara malinconia. È un giorno nuovo, però è qualcosa di nuovo arriverà. Oh sì. Scienziati studiano cose, tra queste cose ci siamo anche noi. Sconfiggeranno quei mali, quelli più brutti, quelli più neri. Pensa a quello che siamo, pensa a quello che saremo. E quei segnali in cielo ci spiegano tristezza ed allegria. Sprechiamo parole, godiamoci quel che abbiamo qui. Oh sì. Pensa a quello che siamo, pensa a quello che saremo, pensa a quello che siamo, pensa a quello che saremo. pensieri se ci stringiamo nella realtà. Oh sì, pensa a quello che siamo, pensa quello che saremo, pensa a quello che siamo, pensa quello che saremo.
Welcome back to the Bold Scientists Under the Shower with Andrea D'Amico. We were talking about pasta, actually, a few seconds.
Yes, yes.
He's apparently very picky. Me too, actually. Yeah. So we want a specific pasta with a specific type of...
very Italian style.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Andrea, thanks a lot for your adventures in academia so far. Mm-hmm. Other probably will follow. Hopefully only good ones. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit more about what a molecular biologist does. So what is the,
cool job, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether the listeners think it's very cool, but make it cool, please.
Yes, yes. So you should believe me, by the way. It's a very cool job. joke apart, the molecular biologist is actually that guy that work on with cells, actually. So he understand how cells works. Based on that, he can understand how, in the end, the body works. So actually, all the knowledge that medical doctors have, it's based on molecular biologists that discover things before them. But technically, is understanding how the cells works and try to figure out how these very complex and fascinating mechanisms work, because biology is super cool. You might know from your school studies, if you have studied in the past, that the cell system is a very complex element, actually. It's a little live element that is able to maintain itself. And the combination of different cells can create a tissue. A combination of different tissues create an organism, and that's actually a human being or whatever other animals. So the little elements, the little cells that are in all of our tissues are able to drive the function of these tissues. And if you want to have a very simple example to understand that, you can image a cell as a little a little factory, and your tissues as a little city. So let's say Amsterdam is your heart, if you are a Dutch lover, or I don't know, another city is another tissue. For example, let's say Utrecht can be your brain or your liver. And in each of these cities, there are different kind of fabrics, little factories. All these little factories are cells. But how these cells works? So technically, if you look inside this little factory, you can see different rooms. The secret sanctum sanctum of a cell is actually a little bunker that is inside. You know, nobody can enter these bunkers because here is where the DNA is stored, which is actually a very important thing. But you might wonder why a cell that is in the liver doesn't work, because the DNA is the same for each cells in our body.
So therefore, in this kind of, as you call it, bunker, I don't know what is that, or this like in the bank, right? This
yes,
lock.
Yes, exactly,
this,
like a very secret.
Yeah, the safe.
Yeah,
so let's call it the safe, right?
Safe, yes.
So in this in the safe of each of those, as you call it, factory, there is the same DNA.
Yes.
What the DNA does?
So the DNA is the genetic material of your, you know, it's what is, it's the reason why you have specific features. For example, if you have fair hairs, or if you have, you know, blue hairs, it's because of your genetics. It's part of the code that is written inside your DNA. So that's,
and you were saying that there is in each factory, say cell, this is the same DNA, but the cell, although the DNA is the same, the cell of the factory behave differently.
Of course, yes. Because, for example, a cell that is in the city of the liver cannot produce or cannot work to produce things that are helpful for the heart, for example. So, as I said, it's like a little factory that produce units, or let's say little workers that do specific works for that city, so for that organ. But in order to access the information to produce this worker, there are, you know, rules. And one of these rules is that, you know, if you imagine the DNA as a big book, inside this book there is all the information that you need to create your body.
The instruction.
Yes, the instruction, exactly. But there is a special librarian that in this little factory, in this little city, give you the access of only that element that is needed for that city. So that little, that special librarian, let's say it's called in biological terms, a promoter. So there are different promoters in each of his cities that are specialized to take only the information that is needed for that city. So it's the instruction for producing something that is useful in the art is not accessible in the city of the liver, for example.
So let me understand. So therefore, you are saying that in this safe, there is the same DNA for each, mm-hmm. for all the factories, for mm-hmm. all the cells. But so this in the DNA, which can be a book, indeed, mm-hmm. a book of instructions.
Yes, a very big book, because
a big
huge
book, indeed. There is in each organ, so in each cities, this is a different librarian that can read only a set of instructions,
yes,
which
well,
is
actually,
useful for the.
Yes,
that
actually, he cannot really read. He can just point to the part of the book that is important. Then there is another figure. Let's say you can imagine him as a little monk. You know, monk in the middle ages, they used to copy books, right? Well, that's the same things in this little factory. There is this little monk who, under the instruction of the librarian, say, okay, you have to copy here, and the monk copied. But he doesn't understand what he is copying, and then what you do is that the monk, as soon as he copied it, bring the paper in a different part of the factory to a lady that is sitting in front of her computer and can read actually what has been copied, and what this lady is doing is actually translating the code, the genetic code, into the code of a protein, which is the unit that the cells produced. So this little worker I was telling you about are nothing else than proteins. And proteins are like a structure characterized by different little pieces that come from the DNA. So the DNA, has a different code. Each three different letter of the DNA encode for an amino acid. Different amino acid characterize different proteins. And that information is written in that paper that this little monk, under the direction of the librarian, took out from the DNA. And this is actually what is called in biology the dogma of biology. And we go from the DNA into the process of transcription, which is the conversion, this little monk that is copying it. The monk is the RNA. So as soon as the RNA is done, the RNA is taken over by the ribosome, which is this little lady with this computer that translates. And that's actually the biological work, translation, produce the protein. And that's the basic of biology.
And now you know the biology, the genetics in just few minutes.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Andrea. It was a very nice metaphor you found to explain how actually the proteins in a specific cell are produced,
yes,
which actually become a very important aspect or part of your daily life work,
yes,
right?
Yes, because each tissues, of course, produce different proteins that are helpful for that tissue, but they are helpful also for the entire organisms. And I'm speaking about specifically the liver because I'm working with the liver, and the liver produce a lot of proteins that are released in the circulation and are present in your body. Whenever you go to have a blood test, the majority of the things that the doctor tell you actually are proteins that come from the liver because the liver produce them. So in my work, so what I explain is actually how the little fabric works normally, right? So you have these little worker that are these protein that are produced from the system that I described right now. And if everything goes well, the little worker, the protein, do the job that is being created for. So let's say a worker can be an hydraulic and he can fix tubes. And that's normally what happen in a normal person. But let's say if...
But I stop you here,
yes,
because now we are going to the core
warm, yes,
part.
Yes.
Yeah, the core part of the radio. So we want to, the radio show, so we want to create a little bit of suspense. And we are doing it by another song from an Icelandic, I don't know what is the correct word in English, artist called, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it would be Died Freyr, something like that. And the song is called Think About Things. And there are a lot of things to think about
yes,
with Andrea that in a few minutes, couple of minutes, will tell us more about what happened when something goes wrong in
exactly
such a mechanism.
Yes.
Okay, so in 3 minutes you will know more. But in the meanwhile, think about things.
I can't wait to know. Believe me, I'll always be there. So I find it hard to see how you feel about me, 'cause I don't understand you. Oh, you are yet to learn how to speak. When we first met, I will never forget, 'cause even though I didn't know you yet, we were bound together then and forever, and I could never let you go. What do you think about things? Believe it, I will always be there, so you can tell me anything and I'll listen. Mm-hmm.
Song from someone from Ireland. Great. So this gave us the right amount of energy to start discussing about gene therapy, isn't it?
Yes,
Andrea.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about. So we were at the point that when everything goes, as it should, that's what it happened.
Yes.
What else?
Yes, so let's say this one of these work that has been already just produced doesn't work as it's supposed to work. So why that happened? It could be that the information that he was written from contained an error, like a mistake or some problems. So let's say this little worker, which is a protein, is supposed to fix a tube, which is do a specific action in the cell, but because of this mistake, it doesn't do it properly. So this, of course, create a problem for the cell, but the cells cannot fix it because the DNA, the information is that one, the cells cannot question the big book in the big safe under the direction of the little librarian. So the DNA say that, that's what is supposed to be. And that's the reason why, for example, a disease can come from. So if there is a defective protein that doesn't work as it's supposed to work, that create a problem that might develop into a pathology, let's say, a problem. And that's, what I'm doing in the gene therapy approach that we are developing. So usually there are a situation like this one, in which, for example, I can apply, describe that based on the work that I'm doing. So in San Quirin, we are working with blood, particularly hemophilia. It's a very common condition of blood blood disorder, which causes bleeding. So these people that have hemophilia cannot clot the blood properly. And that's because there is a missing protein. So one of these words.
So what happened? Sorry if I interrupt you, but yeah. What happened exactly with the hemophilia patient? So give us some example. Because
yes, for example, it's a very common. Usually it's also very difficult social problem because hemophilia people are very afraid to go out from their place. They don't go out at all because if they bump into something, they can have like an internal bleeding that can cause their death. So if you bump into a table, you can have like I don't know the word the livid. Like you can have
The blue. I don't know.
A bruise. That's the name. A bruise. You have like that livid color on your skin. But after a few days, that go away. But that's actually blood that came out from damaged vessels, capillaries and blood vessels that got damaged when you bump into the table. But in a normal person, the worker that I was told you about was functionally correctly. So the blood clot itself stopped the blood to go out and then you heal, let's say. But a hemophilia person depends also on the severity of the defection, let's say, because there are different degrees on how the protein, how this working can be not functional, let's say. But in the worst case scenario, if you bump, if an hemophilia person bump into a table, can die because its blood don't clot and you have an internal hemorrhagic event that can be lethal for
them. And I guess that this is even more crucial if you bump your head, right?
Yes, exactly. So the majority of these people actually die because of very silly problems, and the majority of them, they die for bleeding in the central nervous system, in the brain.
Okay, agreed. I mean, yeah, no, it's not really great. But
that's the reason why I'm very passionate about this.
Indeed.
Exactly. It's a very cool, because it's also a very simple approach, because, you know, the defection is just in one protein. So if we can replace that protein, we can solve the problem. And that's actually, you know, the only cure for these people is actually, weekly injection of the defective protein. Because another thing that I haven't told you about is that these little workers that are produced in the way that I was describing before, they work only one day shift in a kind of human version of it, because they have what is called in biology a very short half-life. So this means that the protein degrades over time and they need to be replaced. So in a normal cells, this process of the monk and the little Brian or whatever, it's continuously performed. So you produce over and over this protein, because as soon as the protein doesn't stop its normal life, it's replaced by another one.
So then let me understand, if the protein doesn't work properly, and if I would like to solve the problem by injecting the same protein, I should inject it all the time.
Yes, exactly. So these people, they have to go to the hospital for the injection at least 2 times per week, which is extremely difficult. You know, can you imagine your life to go going every day 2 days in the hospital? It's not an easy life.
And as Dutch people care, is expensive.
Exactly, super expensive, because this protein need to be produced by us, by scientists. They have to culture cells to produce, because this little factory, they can be, made in vitro, what is called in vitro in a lab, and they can be used to produce the protein by ourselves. Then we have to, purify the protein, which means like taking out all the jargon around it. And in order to have the protein pure, so that you don't risk to kill the person because of a contamination, right? You want to inject only the protein. So that's what, it's the current course of action for these people. But that's not optimal, because it's very expensive. You need reagents, you need the material, you need the scientists that stay there. You have to pay the poor scientist. Please pay the poor scientist.
Donate.
Exactly.
But that's where you come into play, right?
Yes. So it's a different kind of scientist that doesn't produce the protein, but create a cure that can solve the problem. Because in our approach, we are aiming to actually inject inside the body of the person affected by this disease, not the protein, but the genetic information. So we want to add a page to that big book, and together with this injection, we want to also include the stubborn librarian, because otherwise the information is not read. So that's what we are trying to do. The only complication is that you want that injection to end it up in the liver. You don't want that information to go in the heart. So you want to go in the liver city, not in the heart city. And for that, you need a car. A car, like a vehicle. It's called like that in biology. It's a vehicle that bring your new page, let's say, in the right place. But of course, these, you know, we don't have smart cars in biology. So this card can go actually around the body, you know, and then can ended up in the actually heart city. But there in the heart city, the little librarian that we are including will not be able to access the big book, because that librarian is specifically able to access the code in the liver.
So you actually, within the information, the page, as you call it, the instruction, you're also adding what you call in technical terms, the promoter.
Yes.
The librarian.
Yes. So okay. the therapy is characterized by three elements. So there is the vehicle, the car that bring the things inside the body. The promoter, so the little librarian, that is specific for the liver, so you want to be, you know, this information to be accessible only in the liver, and then the information itself, so the page to be added to the DNA. And in case, let's say, this little vehicle goes in the wrong place, as I said, the librarian will not be able to access the bunker because his liver. It's like, you know, you have a policeman that go in a different city and, oh, you don't have the jurisdiction here. You cannot work. That's exactly like it's supposed to, you know, that's how it works.
So, Andrea, So does it work this way? You are still experimenting?
Yes, of course. Yes. So this is it's a very oversimplification of the many complications that arise in this system. It's a very complex system. It's very difficult. Right now we have the problem that, for example, our little vehicle doesn't want to go in the liver, so it go everywhere, and that's not really a big of a problem because, as I said, the librarian will not be able to access the code, so you will not risk to have the production of your protein in a different tissue, but you reduce the efficiency of the therapy because the vehicles go in different place, not in the liver. So.
But I mean, just out of curiosity, because now, how many places this vehicle or vector goes?
That depends on the kind of, you know, if you want to use a Ferrari, for example. I am a Ferrari fan, so I cannot, I have to say that. Or you want to use, for example, a Mercedes. No, please don't use a Mercedes. What I'm saying is that different cars go in a different places. So we are trying to select for the best car that goes only in the liver. And the other thing that we are working on is to try to engineerize this car. We want to modify it. We want to, you know, make it more efficient in order to try, let's say, to insert in a TomTom.
Do you know? Sure. Is that Tom? Yeah. Yes. The navigator.
The navigator, exactly. You want to include the map to go in the liver. So to instruct the vehicle to go only in the liver. That's called vector engineering. And it's a kind of a modification of this vehicle that we are performing in St. Queen. Yes. Super.
Okay, we're gonna go a little bit more in detail. Thanks a lot, Andrea. I should say that, I remember that we discussed last week that you were not confident doing that because you didn't know whether you could manage, but I mean, you're amazing.
Thank you very much.
I'm learning a lot of things, I'm sure also our listeners. So before the end of the show, because we are already almost at the end, only 10 minutes almost are still remaining. So I want to have another break with another song called Chitarre Blu by Fulminacci, he's a Roman singer. And then we're going to proceed with the last block. And you will really tell us what you do in everyday life in your lab. Okay.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Andrea, once again. And enjoy Chitarre Blu by Fulminacci.
Siamo stati tante cose tranne questa qua. E quello sguardo non lo so dove ti porterà. Non ti leggo nella testa, c'ho la sensazione che non ci riesci neanche tu, sarà la distrazione. Ma la distrazione non parla e non parlerà. Guardiamo scorrere veloce il tempo e arriva un tormentone. ma forse è troppo lento. E quello che è successo fa. Dentro il mare, nelle onde, negli zaini dei cantanti, nell'immaginario di un po' tutti quanti, nelle stanze, nei pensieri, dietro al vento la rincorri, la voglia di fare un passo in avanti. Sorrido e mi sorridi, come facevo il pezzo brutto che però era bello. Di questi tempi mi addormento con la faccia in giù, mi sento come quei vestiti che non vanno più. Una chitarra blu che non vende, non venderà. Guardiamo scorrere veloce il tempo e come l'alta moda arriverà il momento. Dentro il mare, nelle onde, negli zaini dei cantanti, nell'immaginario di un po' tutti quanti, nelle stanze, nei pensieri, dietro al vento la rincorri, la voglia di fare un passo in avanti, nelle tasche dei bambini, nei colori dei contanti. In un sacco di parole tutte a caso, nei baci di Giuda, al pane che butti.
Eccoci, welcome back. Yeah, that I switch in Italian for some reason. Yeah, because I was talking with Andrea, who was telling me something quite interesting, that kind of hide somewhere there, he didn't want to tell us. Because it's actually very interesting what we were saying during the song. Ooh-ah! Those that you call vector of vehicles, right?
That's the very simple way to describe them. But they are actually originally viruses that we have engineered to avoid, or actually to stop them to replicate in our body. And we actually use them. It's like actually to, you know, take an alien, take them, their brain out, and then use them for our purposes. It's a very like.
So you make viruses good people.
Yes,
somehow.
Exactly. So we avoid them to replicate. So we take out the DNA part of the viruses, and we just use the external part, that is the vehicle that I was tell you about. And the interesting thing is that some people that are listening to us who got AstraZeneca as a COVID vaccine, AstraZeneca is based on the same technology. So these viruses I was telling you about are called AAVs, so adeno-associated viruses. And there are many of them, because we as humans, we got into contact with them, during our normal life. And indeed, some of the patients that cannot access gene therapy technology is exactly for this reason, because they already have a lot of antibodies against these viruses.
They will kill. The vehicle.
Yes, they will kill the vehicle, the car, before even reach the cities, like bombarding them with
That's super interesting.
Ballistic rifles. Yes.
So I need to apologize, Andrea, because you only have 3 minutes to explain what you really do. I mean, what a part of your normal lab life.
Yeah, it's because, there are so many things.
I know, but I mean, I promise you to invite you again because this is also, I mean, very important. So what are the phases, what are the steps
to doing this type of research? That's the other complication, because this technology is very young, which means that we need scientists are very picky, particularly are very accurate, despite what people think. But we are very, very accurate in our work, so we want to make sure that this technology is not toxic, will be effective and efficient in its action. So that means that we need to run a lot of different tests, let's say. The first of them are usually in vitro, as I was saying, just with the cells, like trying to bombard hepatic cells, which are this little fabric I was telling you about, and see if they can do something, if they can work in producing the protein that we want them to produce, to solve the problem. And after that, we go to animals, because the only way to treat, or at least to test at therapy, unless somebody of you guys want to come to our lab and then be a volunteer, but I don't think it's an ethical thing.
A lot, but I would kind of refrain from that.
Yes, exactly. So that's the reason why animal testing is needed. And for whoever listen and doesn't agree with that, to make you at peace, let's say, we are doing this in a very, very nice way. So these animals are very well treated, and we are doing everything in our power to avoid them pain and suffering. But we need to test the technology in the animals. But there are different kind of animals. So there are normal animals, but there are also modified animals that we called humanized animal, which means that they have been modified in order to have a human part. It seems very creepy, but can be done. And particularly for this kind of technology, the therapy I'm working on, we have animals that have hepatic cells that come from humans, which seems it's super cool. But in that way, we can see if our vehicle that we modify can really target human hepatocytes, which is actually the end, the goal of our experiment. Right? We want to know if we can manage, efficiently target human cells. And it's important to do this in animals, because it's called in vivo experimentation. Is extremely important, because the cell that are growing in a dish will not behave the same way in a full body. So we need that experiment. And then finally, we also have to go to bigger animals that are closer to human, because again, that's the only way that we can test as much as possible to have something similar to humans. So we go to monkeys, or for example, for hemophilia, we have dog models, dogs that are modified with the hemophilia condition.
Okay, because I guess that if you use dog, it means that the liver of dogs is closer.
These animals have been modified in order to express the hemophilia condition. So they have bleeding problem, and we are treating them in order to cure the bleeding problem. So if we manage to do that, we are pretty much sure that the technology can work also in human.
And finally, there is,
and then there are clinical trials. So in that case, you have actually volunteers that come in the hospital and sign a form and saying like, okay, I want to be enrolled in this clinical trial. And they give you the option. You actually don't know. You receive a placebo or the treatment. And then, of course, you are a patient in that case. So you have the condition that we want to cure. And then these usually are very big group of you know, court, it's called in jargon, let's say. And then finally, the results of the clinical study can be important to get funds for, you know, treating more people. Because if the clinical trials go well, we are done. But we are far, far from there, unfortunately.
Okay, but let's hope that you will get millions of euros and we will manage to soon apply what you are doing. So thanks a lot, Andrea. Thanks a lot. I promise you that I will invite you again so you explain us biology, gene therapy.
Thank you for the invitation again.
Yeah, thank you. See you next month. Thank you all of you to have listened to us, and see you next month, the second Monday of the next month, June. And now I leave you with the ciao ciao from Rappresentantilista. Bye, Andrea. Thanks a lot.
Bye bye.